Shana and I recorded this show just hours before the chaos began in Washington. We hope you find that today's show sheds light on what is happening. If you want to join us in our ongoing deeper dives into the forces at work in our society and culture and have not yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at our website, whatingods.com, whatingods.com. Now here is today's show. Shana, you're my friend and I trust you.
Is there a question here?
There's a statement that's coming.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel safe.
Oh, okay.
Coming out.
Okay.
I'm going to come out to you
today.
Excellent. I feel a deep attraction to conservatism. Not what's popularly known as conservatism, but the intellectual tradition that generally goes back to Edmund Burke. You're speechless.
No, I'm just thinking. I'm thinking because what you're saying resonates for me. I am not Burkean averse. I'm not conservative averse. In fact, and I think I've said this any number of times, before I am a Democrat, I am an American. And as an American citizen, I know that our system relies on two parties, each of which has historically carried the conservative flag at different times in its life, right? So, listen, man, I just want you to know that it's okay. You know, no matter who you are, where you are on your faith or life's journey, you're welcome here, Chris. And he's Chris Owen.
She is Shana Appel. Welcome to What in God's Name. We're doing philosophical and theological reflections on current events and culture.
Welcome, friends. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021.
We are pushing back against the domination of politics and economics, the domination that those spheres of life have over our public conversations. We're also pushing back against people who believe that religion should be just private. We, to them, say, no, religion has something important to say about our public life together. And we also push back against the quasi-theocrats, Shana, who say, yeah, religion in the public square, great idea. Let's make it my religion.
At the exclusion of everyone else's.
And we say to that, no, you can't do that in this plural society that we live in America. We have a spinny wheel. It has our core values on it, and it has some concepts that are core ideas in our show. We like to give the spinny wheel a spin. It gives us a chance to talk about one of those core values or ideas. Shana doesn't like me necessarily to describe the spinny wheel. I'll keep it brief. Think Wheel of Fortune, but instead of the pointer landing on a sum of money,
think Wheel of Fortune meets Swamp Yankee, and you will get an image for what this thing looks like.
The pointer will end up on a core value or idea, and then we'll do a little riff on it as a way to help people understand what in God's Name is about. And, which reminds me to say, as people pick up our show at various times, this might be your first show, we welcome you. Shana, who's going to give this thing a spin for the first spin of 2021?
Why don't you do it, Chris, since it's your wheel? And I, you know what I realized is that the spinning wheel gives us an opportunity to put an intellectual spin on whatever the topic du jour is. So here you go.
Shana, the spinny wheel landed on our definition of culture being habits of mind and patterns of behavior. So
perfect for today's show.
It is. It's always so perfect for today's show. When we talk about current events in culture, we want to define culture as the habits of mind and patterns of behavior that we engage in that are often unconscious, but we try to lift it up into the light so that we can critically examine the ways that we here in the United States pattern our lives, the ways we habitually think and act. Do you want to add anything to that definition?
No, because I'm going to put it on a shelf until we get into our topic for the day.
So I've come out as being attracted to conservative thought, and I wanted to spend a little time defining that for our audience, because there are popular understandings of what conservatism is that are just plain wrong. The first thing I want to say is that there is a current falsehood that Republican means conservative. I'll say more about that later, but when you read things in the media today, you will always see this false equivalence that Republican is shorthand for conservative. It's a lie that's perpetuated, I think, because it's just convenient to think in these kinds of simplistic terms. It's convenient for the sports team model of reporting on politics, dividing Republicans and Democrats, dividing liberals and conservatives, dividing red and blue, and they all just kind of line up in a neat little column. And that makes it easy to report then, because it's like sports teams, and that's what we know. Who are the winners? Who are the losers? Who's being defeated? The columns just don't line up so neatly. So that's the first thing. Be aware when you're reading the news these days. Republican does not necessarily mean conservative. Second thing I want to say about this is that a conservative voice or a conservative perspective is important for a healthy political body in the United States. Some may disagree with that. Those who think conservatism is just a disease. But I'm going to quote from Andrew Bacevich's book about American conservatism. It recently came out. His argument, it's worth quoting at some length here. He says, those who abhor conservatism, those who dislike conservatism, and who think there's already too much of it in the United States, too much exposure to conservative perspectives, whether coming directly from Trump's White House, from megaphone-wielding House and Senate Republicans, or from outlets such as Fox News, AM Talk Radio, the right-wing websites. Yet all of these qualify as conservative only in the sense that blue-chip recruits at a football factory qualify as student athletes. Any resemblance to the real article is superficial and manufactured. Wow. So Andrew Bacevich is making the claim that I agree with, which is a lot of so-called conservatives are not.
I think Andrew Bacevich just bitch-slapped the entire Republican Party, but okay.
He goes on to say, Donald Trump is not a conservative. I've been saying that for a long time.
Yeah.
Nor are the leaders of the Republican Party over which Trump presides. Prominent GOP figures such as Mitch McConnell seem to adhere to no worldview worthy of the name. As for the provocateurs who inhabit the sprawling universe of right-wing media, their principal motive is not to promote genuine conservative values, but to rabble-rouse and line their own pockets. So except among the multitudes who sport MAGA hats and look to the likes of Sean, Laura, and Rush for instruction, the conservative brand has of late been badly tarnished and even degraded. As a result, conservatism today has become synonymous with meanness, bigotry, and retrograde attitudes. Andrew Bacevich's argument is that conservative thought as an intellectual tradition has value to offer, and I believe that as well. So what are the values of conservative thought that we really need? 2 points for us. There's more, but I think two that are pertinent for today. One is, conservative thought has a healthy respect for human limitation. And a corollary to that is that civilization is fragile. Descent into violence is not out of the question, because humans are limited, fallible, prone to being lost, prone to selfishness. Another corollary is, conservative thought distrusts that we can ever get to human perfectibility. Human perfection is not something we can get to. Distrust, therefore, of utopian views of society, and a distrust that we can ever get to happily ever after. So with that in mind, Andrew Bacevich quotes Russell Kirk in this vein. All that we can reasonably expect is a tolerably ordered, just, and free society in which some evils, maladjustments, and suffering continue to lurk. So the conservative perspective is there's always going to be strife. There's always going to be some level of injustice. By proper attention to prudent reform, says Russell Kirk, we may preserve and improve this tolerable order. But if the old institutional and moral safeguards of a nation are forgotten, then the anarchic impulses of humanity break loose.
I don't disagree. I can accept that. It may not be mine, but I totally get that.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally get like how somebody would arrive at that thought. And I guess the only counterpoint I'd have to it is I don't know if I think perfectibility is possible. I certainly don't expect it in my lifetime, but should that stop us from trying? Should that stop us from visioning so long as we don't undermine those, you know, cornerstones?
Yeah, I think that's a separate argument, but it's a pushback. Conservatism in this sense is a pushback against certain Enlightenment-inspired views of humanity that really emphasized human reason and science, that was the saving power, and that is the saving power. I think that strain of thinking still exists.
Oh, absolutely.
In Western psyche. And the conservative response to that Enlightenment thinking is to say, no, human reason is limited. Suffering is not going to be eliminated by science and technology. That's all. One more little point, and then I want to hear.
Go. I'm fascinated. Go ahead.
The second principle of the conservative intellectual tradition that I want to raise. There's more than these two, but it's a 22 and a half minute show, maybe a little longer today. There's a moral order to the universe to which society should aim to meet, to form itself into. There's a moral order to the universe.
Well, I can tell you the moral order for the conservatives, the so-called conservatives right now, seems to be a blind attachment to Donald Trump and personal power.
And that's where I wanted to go with this. So here are some pieces of it that I think are pertinent to today. The moral order, to answer your question, would include, yes, there is such a thing as truth. Truth is part of the moral order of the world.
Wait a minute, stop the presses.
Yeah, and the second would be that moral order includes the ability of individuals to transcend me, myself, and I for the greater good. That would be part of any moral vision.
The ability or the requirement?
Well, it's a requirement because it's a moral good. I mean, we're
so
duty bound.
It's a net necessity.
We're duty bound, yes, yeah. to transcend me, myself, and I. So this is the last thing I want to say.
Yeah, go.
This idea about a moral order to the universe gives context to Mitt Romney's recent observation about Josh Hawley has ambition so eclipsed principle.
Yes.
And, you know, Mitt Romney is voicing the conservative perspective. There is a moral order. There is principle that is bigger that we need to be obedient to order ourselves to. And he's
questioning. A higher good.
A higher good.
And, be it the democracy, be it, you know, the Constitution. I mean, we have to have some core agreement, something that we as a nation can collectively bind ourselves to, that we say this is where it starts, or this is what constitutes the center. And being a free society, it doesn't necessarily define the perimeter, but at its core, you know, democracy is. And certainly the Constitution captures a piece of that in the same way that we might say sacred texts capture a piece of the faith traditions that they come out of. But in order to be relevant, they have to be, you know, seen both in terms of the world in which they were written and also brought forward into the world as it is today. All of that seems lost in this. I mean, what you just described as conservatism, like, I'd be surprised, honestly, if many of our listeners, you know, they're going to be like, well, if that's conservatism, I am actually not opposed to conservatism. May not be my thing, but I'm not opposed to it. And in fact, let me go a step further. I can see the value in bringing conservative thought to any idea or any project that we're working on. So, yeah, okay, I tend to be the more utopian. Okay. But, you know, somebody's got to pull me down out of the clouds and you know, get it down onto paper into some, you know, functional order. So I see the value. I mean, I could see the value in conservatism as it is described there, as it is playing out right now on the public square. It's not conservatism. It really is a blind, it is a blind dash for personal power and ambition. Grown men who need to be liked by Donald Trump because they're so afraid he, one man, is going to upend their political careers that they gave up faith on the people who actually elected them to office.
Thank you for listening to me and hearing me out on that. And I agree that those two particular pieces of the conservative intellectual tradition transcend party affiliations. They should.
They should.
They should.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting because when you first mentioned this title, you know, I was trying to think about it and I couldn't get beyond the political. And then eventually I sort of got into this idea that I was juggling around in my head that whether it be a faith tradition or a democracy, there has to be that core. And so, you know, we might say, and take as a premise for today's conversation, that both politics and faith arise out of the question, how shall we live together? We go about answering those questions differently, right? So in the political realm, we legislate, we pass laws, we create constitutions and institutions to help us, you know, live together. In a faith tradition, the focus is inward. How do we become the best people we can be in order to be the best people we can be for ourselves, our loved ones, our communities, and our world? But both, again, both have a core. And while I'm not a conservative, so I, you know, I mean, I hate to, I feel like I'm off the beaten path here if I try to describe to a conservative what a conservative is. But that having been said, I think I feel fairly comfortable, especially given your definition, in saying that for the most part, the bulk of the Republican Party today has become completely untethered from any of that.
And blind ambition and power and seeing the world as just an unending competition of my will against your will, that would be an anti-conservative perspective. It's an idea that transcends the what we know as the political spectrum, because there are people who would describe themselves as liberal progressive who see the world similarly. The only point I'm making here is that the opposite of seeing a moral order in the universe is seeing no moral order in the universe, and therefore the competition, the striving for power, every man against every man, that kind of vision of dog eat dog.
That's anarchy.
We are alone in society. We have to look out for ourselves, get our own, defeat everybody else. It's the vision that leads to domination, just kind of domination views of power. If I don't dominate, I'm going to get dominated.
Yeah.
And then there's no restraint. There's no moral vision that restrains those appetites, that restrains that desire for power, that restrains the impulse to dominate.
And it's you know, it's always so funny when I'm like, God, this is what we've been saying, you know, on this show since the beginning. Politics is downstream of culture, right? So this wing, this I don't even know what you want to call it, wing of the so-called Republican Party, you know, is so far off the tracks, but they are downstream. They are leading now, not in response to a culture that became all about, you know, individuals and corporations and amassing huge amounts of wealth, that they kind of lost their tether to the core principle. We have a culture, we have patterns of thought and habits of behavior that lead people in this direction. And now this wing of the Republican Party has just fallen in lockstep with it. But it also reminds me of the interview you did with Mark Heim, in which he was talking about how in society we have swings. If you look at the historical arc, it swings back and forth between, you know, being generous and supporting one another, like perhaps where we saw American culture after World War II, and where we are today, which is, you know, pretty much every man for himself.
And so that does lead to the question, what is the story that we could tell ourselves about the time we live in? How are you telling yourself the story of what's going on in the world today in terms of the Electoral College and these elections in Georgia? What's the story for you?
It goes something like this. It goes, oh my God, are you kidding me? Because, I mean, I find myself so outraged most days, just outraged and feeling like these guys need to be held to account. There's a, not an app, but something called ResistBot is doing a campaign, and you text the word sedition to, you know, this particular number, and then it, you know, they will send your name off to your representatives, basically saying, we want all of these Republicans who are standing up, who are standing in opposition to the outcome of the 2020 election, to be held accountable for sedition, you know, at the very least, to see these people censured. I mean, you take an oath. You take an oath to office. Now, if a kid misbehaves and you don't stop it at the stage of, you know, stealing sugar off the dining room table, eventually it's going to be, you know, stealing candy from the corner store, and eventually it could be, you know, ripping the American people off in some massive Ponzi scheme. Those of us who still feel bound to some ethic and morality, ethics and morals that bind us each to each and each to all, that we need to stand up and say, no more of this. No more of this. So yeah, my most often my takeaway is, oh my God, are you freaking kidding me? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, I cannot. It is kind of making me a crazy person, I think.
If you ask that outraged part of yourself what it is that that outraged part loves, that is offended and leads to outrage, what is the love that is offended?
I mean, for me, of course, it's going to come out of my faith tradition. I mean, as a Unitarian Universalist, we have seven principles. And among those are things like, you know, the inherent worth and dignity of what we covenant to affirm and promote, the inherent worth and dignity of all people, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, the use of the democratic process in our congregations and in the world at large, a meaningful search for truth. Let me say that last one again, a meaningful search for truth, you know, as if it exists. Those are things that are just so offended right now. I think about, as someone who identifies as Judeo-Christian, the current treatment of the least of these, it seizes my head. It's like the old typewriters, you know, when you used to hit too many keys at once and they would all go forward and lock up. Like, that's what I feel sometimes just happens in my whole being. You cannot treat people like this. You cannot get away with this. You cannot do it. And people say, yeah, well, you know, tough, they're going to. And I'm like, they won't forever. Because the arc of justice is, historically, the arc has never bent their way. So I know God's time isn't my time. I wish this stuff would happen a hell of a lot faster. But I think within my lifespan, Reverend Warnock's mother, who picked cotton once upon a time, this is a story he was telling last night in his speech, his mother, who with her own two hands picked someone else's cotton, had an opportunity yesterday to use those same two hands to cast a vote for her youngest son.
If I may say so, I believe that when you were naming what you love that is offended, that leads to your outrage, that what you love is a beautiful picture of the moral order of the universe.
I'm not even going to, yeah, again, and I wouldn't argue. So I
didn't expect you to argue.
Yeah, so moral order. I might argue I get there by allowing myself to imagine the utopian, but I don't see those two as necessarily divergent. And man, we need both of those in our leadership today, don't we? So I'm really glad, Chris, that you introduced this topic, and I'm wondering, what's your takeaway for today?
My takeaway is my gratitude to you for being affirming of me when I came out in our show today as a person who has an attraction to conservative thought.
Well, we'll give a nod to Professor Parker Palmer then for his book, Healing the Heart of Democracy. Yes, I think that I can hear. That's grounded in truth. There's a humanity within it. What I can't listen to is, I can't listen to people anymore who say, you know, the choice is between law and order and communist socialism. I cannot listen to people who say the choice is between throwing children in small pens, separating them from their families, or just opening the borders. I cannot, it's bullshit, Chris. It is absolute bullshit, and I am so sick and tired of it. They're wrong. Okay? I said it. They're just wrong.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine a light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon, as well as our donors on Filmmakers Collaborative. You can find us on Facebook at What in Gods, and you can sign up for our newsletter on our website, whatingods.com, which is Shana.
WHATINGODS.
Great to see you.
Happy New Year, Chris.